see that train a-rollin', it's rollin' round the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train, it keeps a-rollin' on down to San Antone.
That was pretty good.
It wasn't terrible.
Yeah. You know? So you could do a musical special.
I mean, if it's all like Johnny Cash, you know?
Yeah.
100% Johnny Cash.
Figure something out.
Yeah.
Now I know your vocal range.
It's not good. It's not great. No, not a lot of versatility there.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Should we start?
Yeah, let's go.
Okay.
So yeah, we've been talking about this for a while.
Yeah, I think literally, maybe not literally since the beginning of our friendship, but possibly like almost since the beginning of our friendship, we have had an ongoing debate about what capitalism is.
And it's not just like that we've been discussing it between ourselves. It's also that people around us have been discussing it, and we've been discussing it with them.
You know,
our mutual friends, we often talk about, you know, what is capitalism, like what, dealing with some of the critiques that people have of capitalism, or making those critiques ourselves.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think, like, I don't know. My purpose in this discussion is I don't really think I'm coming at it as like a specific anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we might clickbait it as like capitalist versus anti-capitalist or something, just spoiler alert, I doubt that I'm going to be like succinctly and successfully arguing an anti-capitalist position.
Yeah.
But Casey is honestly the first person that I've known that's actually been like hardcore, like, I'm a capitalist. And I'm fascinated by that. Most people my age, their only political position is that they're anti-capitalist.
Right. Yeah.
So it was fascinating for me to kind of hear you talk about why you like capitalism and mm-hmm. Milton Friedman, who's like enemy number one in my previous book. And I don't know. I think like I'm trying to just suss out like what is it exactly that you're talking about when you talk about capitalism?
Right. Yeah.
What is capitalism? Yeah. And what is it that society is talking about? Because I think it's such a buzzword at this point that people have these ideas of like, this is what capitalism is, like fuck capitalism, or like I love capitalism. Like we have capitalism to thank for this. Like,
yeah. Both
positive and negative.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I think in the last couple months as we've been talking about it, we've kind of come up with like multiple definitions of capitalism, like mm-hmm. what capitalism actually is,
and what do people mean when they say capitalism,
right?
And this is a lot of what, you know, this is a lot of what people get hung up on. What is capitalism? I think capitalism is really very simple, that mm-hmm. it's just private property. That's basically what capitalism is, that people think of, you know, markets and prices and trade as being defining features of capitalism, and they are, but they're what you get when the means of production are private property.
Mm-hmm.
You just make the rule that, you know, capital can be privately owned and people can do whatever with it that they like. And then what you get out of that, how people naturally then start to organize their affairs around, is, you know, prices and markets and money and firms and trade and everything like that. But in a way that's not sort of central to, you know, if you wanted to enact capitalism, you wouldn't say, okay, we have to have markets, we have to have prices, we have to have trade, we have to have, you know, finance. What you would enact is, okay, we're going to have private property, and mm-hmm. capital can be, and things that we consider to, like capital, you know, the classic, you know, things like factories and machines and everything, that can all be privately owned. Then what you get naturally, the same as if you put a bunch of ants together, you get an ant hive, ant colony, I guess, is you get, you know, markets and trade and prices and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not, you know, you don't dictate that. The dictate of capitalism is that there's going to be private property, essentially.
So would you say, okay, so I think like, that's your definition. That's everyone's, like, that's Marx's definition of capitalism too. But I think like beyond that sort of private property definition, there's these critiques that end up sort of becoming definitions. So
right.
like one
right.
I would say is, you know, capitalism is a power structure or a hierarchy, like a way of organizing society, mm-hmm. where those who have the most capital have the most power,
mm-hmm.
right? So like, and that is what drives then people to pursue profit and capital over anything else, is that you are pursuing more capital. You always want to get more capital because you will be able to control society with that.
Right.
And I think that's what a lot of people think capitalism is. There's other sort of side offshoots.
Right. Yeah. I think it's like people, I guess I want to really be fair. Like, I think some of these critiques are like really kind of ridiculous, but like, it's like, yeah, like it is kind of, I think it is not in line with what we think is beautiful or what we think is pleasant, mm-hmm. that we have sort of like fierce competition and people trying to, you know, satisfy their, I don't know, it's like everybody wants to like satisfy their needs and wants. Everybody sort of has unlimited needs and wants, and that under capitalism, it's all very visible, you know, and people see it and they don't like it.
Well, okay, but I think on an individual level, right? Like, mm-hmm. let's say someone is like an individual capitalist in the sense of like, they are always trying to hustle and grind to make that like last cent, and they fuck over their friends and they compete with their friends.
I mean,
let me finish.
Are we talking about an actual capitalism, or are we talking about a sort of caricature of capitalism?
I'm talking about a hypothetical that's like an individual person that embodies that sort of critique of like super competitive.
Okay.
Like,
so this is the caricature of capitalism.
Sure. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So like, how do you, I guess like with your argument, what I struggle with is like, where is the distinction between capitalism being a way to organize society,
mm-hmm.
and capitalism being a way that we think about meaning and
right.
structure
right.
in our individual lives?
Right. Yeah. I think of capitalism as being merely a way to organize government,
mm-hmm.
and not the way that we should define meaning in our own lives, and not how we should organize our own lives. For a lot of people, doing capitalism actually involves a lot of like relaxing and slacking out off and hanging out with their friends,
mm-hmm.
and capitalism provides them the slack with which to do that, the excess resources, the excess time with which to do that.
I think it makes sense that if your argument is that capitalism is the best way to create abundance in a society,
mm-hmm.
then it's also the best way to like not live like a capitalist in your own individual life, because we have more abundance, we have more resources to share. You generally have a better life.
Yeah.
I see that. I think, so we've been, as we said, we've been preparing for this episode for like a long ass time.
Yeah.
Literally every time.
Every time we see each other, we'll like go back and forth and argue a little bit about like these different things.
But as a result, you know, when I'm watching TikToks or I'm on like Twitter, I'm talking to people in person, I'm taking note of any time that somebody says capitalism or blames capitalism and what exactly it is that they're talking about, like mm-hmm. trying to get to the bottom of it. And I think one big critique that people have,
the people listening, I'm just lighting my pipe.
Yeah, it's some ASMR, honestly. I hope people are enjoying the audio.
Yeah,
one big critique that I think people have that they claim is capitalism, but mm-hmm. I think is actually not, and this is one that I will agree with you is absurd and ridiculous, is they conflate individual hustle culture, like mm-hmm. grind set mindset,
right.
with capitalism.
Right.
And while I think that comparison isn't fair in the sense that those people aren't correctly using the term, I do still think that people complaining about it is a fair societal phenomenon to be addressing. I just don't think it's like the type of thing where it's like, oh, why do I have to like slave away 9 to 5 just mm-hmm. to like purchase all these consumptive goods and mm-hmm. like just be striving for hustling and always getting more capital and always like competing with people. I don't want to live that way. It's not good for me.
Well, one thing I will say about criticism of consumer culture
mm-hmm.
is that it's almost always a criticism of what other people are consuming.
Well, it's a projection. It's usually people feel it, like, I think you're right, but it's oftentimes people projecting who are extremely consumerist themselves.
I'm not sure. I mean, because I don't see people talk about their individual, when people make the criticism of we have this like consumer culture, they're often kind of criticizing what other people are consuming,
yeah,
not what they are consuming.
I'm saying that, like, so on it's a like, psychological level, that's because they're critiquing themselves and they can't handle that.
I don't think so. I think
okay,
it's
what
because
do you think?
I think it's because they don't like what other people consume. I think that they think that what other people consume is like valueless,
mm-hmm.
and in some sense that those other people should not want to consume those things.
Yeah.
They should not want to buy, you know, whatever, like clothes or shoes or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that to some degree, this critique is about thinking that what other people want and value is distasteful.
Yeah.
And then when capitalism gives people the things that they want, that's like a criticism. Like, we were at Costco eating the $1.50 hot dogs the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Eating a couple,
a soda
and a hot dog that each cost $1.50.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one kind of criticism is like, God, like, you know, look at capitalism, like forcing this like unhealthy food down people's throats,
mm-hmm.
making it incredibly cheap. But I think it's that people like $1.50 hot dogs, mm-hmm. and capitalism is just very efficient at giving people what they want.
And in this example, I'm the person that you're saying, because I was like, God, this is what's ruining this country. It's not, though. I'm not offended by $1.50 hot dogs. I mean, that ties into a whole other kind of, actually, maybe this is an like a good way to segue into another critique of capitalism that I think you would share. It's not a critique of capitalism. It's a critique of society that I think you share,
mm-hmm.
that people also conflate with capitalism, which is a critique of corporatism.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that conversation that we were having about the $1.50 hot dog and soda devolved into me like going full conspiracy brain about Monsanto.
Right. Yeah.
I think like the idea that certain corporations have so much power because they have so much money,
mm-hmm.
is non-ideal.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You would agree with that.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Do you, I mean, I guess because your framing of capitalism is sort of this like anti-government,
mm-hmm.
framing, the
yes.
difference between what you're talking about and the corporatism kind of control of society,
mm-hmm.
is that corporations can use the government, mm-hmm. to control society.
That's right.
So they can create laws or regulations or whatever that favor them, regulatory capture,
mm-hmm. yep.
and they can basically set up society so that people are coerced into buying their products and like essentially forced to.
It's usually not that they're coerced, that I can't think of examples where people are actually coerced into buying their products, but you know, a lot of the time it's that, you know, regulation gets made which is friendly to corporations,
yeah.
and that advantages them, and
it decreases competition.
Yeah,
that's what I
yeah.
mean.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
like maybe people aren't forced to, but they aren't really getting the free market of options.
Mm-hmm.
They're
right.
getting fraction of that is like informed by regulation and policy that is lobbied by moneyed interests.
Right.
And I think
right.
that is what we're living through right now. That is like the soup of America.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's that, you know, under capitalism where things are competitive and private property is controlled by individuals, and the more successful individuals will start to allocate more and more capital. They'll like obtain and allocate more and more capital. That inequality, which is just, you know, people controlling different amounts of resources, sometimes also leads to oftentimes like unequal capture of government.
Mm-hmm.
That the people who have more resources will be able to capture the government and like move things in their favor. That I think is the thing that people don't like about capitalism.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, I always see that as being sort of a failure of government.
Right.
And I think other people see that as being something that capitalism does. It's very unclear to me. I mean, it's like, it's hard, like, because there are kind of good things about inequality too. Like, If trying really hard and being innovative doesn't get you more stuff, like a better lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
then nobody is really incentivized to try harder than average.
Well, going back to what I said about people's critique of 9-to-5 hustle grind set culture, mm-hmm. that I think is what they're saying, is that like, why am I hustling to not even get a better life which, again, I don't think is necessarily a fair critique of capitalism, but mm-hmm. I think because people just think, oh, America is a capitalist country. We are living in capitalism.
Yeah.
Actually, we're living in late stage capitalism.
Late stage capitalism,
you
yeah.
know, that's kind of the, it's the easy way of just succinctly making your point. But I think the point that they're actually trying to make is that, like, you know, millennials and generations under
mm-hmm.
have to hustle to, like, not even be able to buy a house.
Yeah,
you
right.
know?
Yeah, I mean, this is the fiat.
This is the fiat.
Yeah, now we get to, mm-hmm. like, why are we talking about capitalism
yeah.
on this? Like, why are we talking about capitalism? We usually talk about Bitcoin. Like, mm-hmm. why is Bitcoin even related to capitalism? And I think it's because, I actually think it ties into the sort of definition of capitalism that I like to use, which is just that it's when you have private property, essentially. So Bitcoin is a money that is usually, like, money, currency, and finance are all very highly regulated things
mm-hmm.
because they're easy for the government to regulate. If I, you know, say, hi, I'm going to issue a currency, you know, I don't know if it's going to be like a gold-backed currency or some other kind of currency. That's a very visible public activity. And the government is going to be able to regulate me if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be able to send goons to my house and, like, arrest me if I don't do what they want. And Bitcoin evades regulation. It's unseizable. It's decentralized. It can't be controlled. And as a result, it's a private property money. And it's that moving of money from a realm where the government can regulate it, from a form that government can regulate it, creating a form of money that government can't regulate it, making it private property.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why it's related to capitalism, because capitalism is about, you know, when it's unregulatable capital. Right? That's what capitalism is about. And it makes money that kind of unregulatable capital. And thus, Bitcoin and capitalism are inexorably intertwined.
Mm-hmm. So I guess in my, you know, journey towards becoming a Bitcoiner, there have been certain terms that I never thought I would associate myself with that I'm mm-hmm. starting to.
Yeah.
Or that I fully embrace at this point.
Yeah.
Anarchism is one.
Yeah, right.
Anti-government
right.
is another.
Yeah.
Capitalism, I'm less inclined yeah. to embrace. And I want to know, what do you think is the difference between those three terms?
Yeah.
Like, what is the nuance in the difference between anarchism, being anti-government, and being a capitalist?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess a lot of anarchists, for me personally, I consider myself an anarchist. And that's mm-hmm. about my moral intuitions.
Yeah. I think I agree with you on that.
Yeah. I've always thought that coercion is wrong. I've just started from a point that, like, coercion is wrong. And everything that the government does has always seemed to me to be obviously coercive. And I've never believed that there was, you know, for example, like a social contract that somehow legitimized government coercion. That just never struck me as being reasonable.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, I think that a lot of people think that. Like, a lot of people say, like, okay, well, the government is coercive, but it's
you don't get murdered.
No, but that it's a democracy, or that it's somehow like the will of the
decide on
yeah, and
our
so
rules.
Yeah, so it's not yeah. that we're being coerced; it's that there's a social contract, and we get things, and we give things up, and in return, one of the things that we give up is sort of freedom from coercion at all times. We accept mm-hmm. certain kinds of coercion. But that's never struck me as being the reality of government. The government doesn't embody my wishes. And if I want to opt out, I'm unable to.
Well, what about, like, base level things like, yeah, like if you murder someone, you're going to go to jail, you know? Like, those sort of things seem like an obvious social contract to me, where you engage in these rules of society for protection of yourself in some way.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing that I think of that. I mean, you know, I think that is good. You know, I think a lot of, like, rule of law and, like, safety mm-hmm. from violence is good. Is that a social contract? I mean, I can't opt out of it. I can't, if the government gets crazy and starts, you know, enforcing laws in a crazy way, I don't have any option to exit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a voluntary contract. Like, calling
right.
it a social contract is
implies
very weird.
Voluntary. well, participation or no?
Yeah, that I can't say, hey, like this deal that I'm getting, I don't want to get this deal anymore.
Yeah.
Like that is what stops it from being a social contract. I have no meaningful, I didn't opt in. I have no meaningful opt out.
Mm-hmm.
I can't dictate any of the terms of, mm-hmm. of that contract.
Okay. Go on with your slight aside there with that. I just am clarifying.
What was I saying before?
I was asking you anarchism versus anti-government versus capitalism.
Oh, yeah.
You're talking about coercion.
Yeah. So like I'm an anarchist because I think that coercion is wrong and all forms of government involve some amount of coercion. And so that makes me like just sort of inherently like dislike those forms of government.
So let's say that. So I think of anarchism as being about free association, which mm-hmm. is another way of saying what you're saying.
Sure, yeah.
Where you're not forced to participate in any
mm-hmm.
dynamic social contract, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But if you decide with a group of people in your neighborhood that, mm-hmm. you know what, it would just be a lot easier if we all got together and we just pitched in some money and built some roads in our neighborhood.
Sure, yeah.
And everyone's fine with that. And some mm-hmm. people are like, you know what, actually, I don't want a road. And you're like, okay, well, then we're not going to build you a driveway or whatever thing. Like, mm-hmm. there's some level of, like, yeah, free association, participation, that level of, would you call that government? What would you call that?
Yeah, it certainly has some of the properties of government.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, it's complicated. Like, we'd have to talk about the details. But, like, yeah, if a bunch of people, like, wanted to, like, make contracts among themselves,
mm-hmm.
I think the ability to, the ability to contract is the ability to give up your own rights surrounding your use of your own property
mm-hmm.
In exchange for things from other people, you know? And so if people wanted to make those sort of voluntary contracts among themselves, I don't know if that's really government.
Like, when does it become government?
Yeah, that's almost like a definitional question. But government
it is. I'm asking. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm getting into the.
This is hard stuff here. So yeah, when does it become government? I guess it becomes government when it's.
Is it enforcement?
It's when it no longer has to do with private property and there's private property and there's contracts between individuals and things that go beyond that. Is government. So for example, if somebody is born and you know you say what they can and can't when this is so complicated.
I know. Yeah. Well, listen, this has been a multi-month.
Yeah. So when I'm opted into agreements that I didn't make, that is when it starts to be government. When they say, okay, you can't smoke weed, you can't grow and smoke weed on your own property.
Mm-hmm.
And I never agreed to this. I never moved somewhere where I agreed to this. That is kind of where it starts to become government.
Okay.
But it's a slippery slope. And my problem isn't really with government exactly. Like if, well, you know, now we sort of have to differentiate between, moral arguments and consequential arguments.
Yeah.
Consequentialist arguments.
So I would argue, well, okay, I think just to give a little bit of my summary of what I think both of us think mm-hmm. and how I think we're foils is I think that your argument about capitalism is a pragmatic one.
Yep.
Or
yep. It's that I don't think that capitalism is inherently moral. It, mm-hmm. It's not my moral intuition that private property is good,
right.
Really. It's that it seems to be the best way to organize that I can think of.
Sure.
I would really like some sort of socialist utopia. Like I watch Star Trek, The Next Generation a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of world where everybody is clearly acting in just sort of altruistically for the benefit of society and mm-hmm. for the benefit of everybody. That is sort of my ideal. I would love that, but I don't think that's achievable in practice. And so as a result, I think like, okay, well, what are the best things what seems to work the best? And it seems like private property and thus capitalism winds up working the best, that it creates the best incentives, that people work hard to like create abundance so that they can, you know, benefit from it personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, you know, spills over into the society and we get the kind of the best society that we want. But it's not based on my moral intuitions. This is based on, you know, observations about the consequences of different policies.
So I think, yeah. So I think you are a capitalist in a pragmatic sense.
I call myself an anarcho-pragmatist.
Sure. Yeah. But I think, okay, I guess Like, I think you think capitalism pragmatically makes sense. Mm-hmm. And then you're a moral anarchist in the sense that you actually think that that's right and wrong.
Yeah.
Like, you think about it in terms of right and wrong.
That's right.
And then you think of capitalism in terms of like, okay, well, what's the best option?
Yeah.
I am the exact opposite where I feel like I'm like, morally, I think capitalism is kind of wrong.
Uh-huh.
But practically, I think anarchism is the best way forward.
Uh-huh, right.
So I think we're kind of...
yeah.
Well, like, I think that's part of the divide between...
Yeah.
Like, is that, like, for me, I kind of think of it as, like, I'm not sure that there's one... I don't think I'm a utopianist. Like, I don't think that there's one perfect way to run society forever mm-hmm. and ever. I think that, like... time is always moving, cycles are always repeating and changing in like distinct ways, and history repeats itself and then it also like doesn't in like weird ways, and I don't know, we're always evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the current situation that we're in right now, the only way forward is more localism, more anarchism, because the institutions are so they're beyond repairing. This is my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And so while I don't necessarily think that anarchism is morally the only option. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I don't, you know, I don't feel super strongly one way or the other morally mm-hmm. about anarchism,
mm-hmm.
but I think practically I'm like, okay, what's the alternative, like, moving forward from here? We're just going to have like increased centralized control and we're all going to be bug people? Like, no, I think the only way forward is like a more anarchist society where people have more free association and more freedom to try different things and mm-hmm. figure out what works, like on a local level, on a cultural level, on a societal level, like to sort of get the leeway to create something new, whatever that might be, and to allow different things to emerge that aren't currently existing in the current system. Because to me, it seems like nothing or maybe very few things in the current system are working in a way that will allow them to continue 100 years from now. So practically, pragmatically,
mm-hmm.
I am like, okay, anarchism is the way forward.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know that I would think that if I was born in any time or in, you know what I mean? Like, that is like me assessing the current situation right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you with capitalism is sort of similar, where you're like, okay, well, what else do we do? How else do we, you know, trade with each other? How else do we organize an economy? How else do we organize a society?
Right.
Give me a better option mm-hmm. right now.
Yep.
And I think no one can really do that. Yeah. And I think actually a lot of anti-capitalists would agree that the best they can come up with is anti-capitalism. It's not something else. It's being against capitalism. And I think that's, you know, that's where you end up winning the argument, basically. Is like, if the best thing we can do is be like bitching about the current system, but having no proposed alternative.
I actually think also a lot of the time that, you know, capitalism achieves their stated goals. That the things that people want, mm-hmm. the things that people are anti-capitalist want, it seems pretty clear that if we made things more capitalist, which just means removing weird government interventions and mm-hmm. letting people do what they want, it would achieve their stated outcomes. And they're just a bit confused about
how things work. Well, I definitely think people are fucking confused. That is for sure.
I think there are some very sticky problems. Like some just very inherently sticky problems that are hard to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those is that of property.
Yeah.
Like if there is a apple, like who gets the apple? And if I don't see a good alternative to private property, right?
Yeah, like, I agree with you.
That's the thing, is that that's like one of the foundations of my sort of pragmatic capitalism, is that if I don't see a good alternative to private property, if you don't have private property, like if you just sort of have like anarchy, I'm not convinced that you could have a situation which wouldn't just devolve into violence.
So is that your distinction between anarchism and capitalism, is private property?
No, because I think for me, anarchism is something that's totally abstract. It's just an abstract, like, moral desire, like not to have coercion.
Mm-hmm.
But then in practice, I don't know how you would do that, how you would have a fully anarchist society. You know, it might be the case that if you had absolutely no state, immediately it would devolve into, you know, like warlords, and like you would get a violent state that it would emerge out of it. You'd get, you know, warlords, you'd get some kind of monarchy, right? like immediately just like basic despotism mm-hmm. would emerge from it. And, you know, so there's kind of two things that you need to solve, two basic problems. One is property. You know, there's all this stuff in the world that people want, and it's very appealing to just do violence to other people to take it, to mm-hmm. just take it by force, take and keep it by force.
Mm-hmm.
And the other problem is physical security, that this is very much tied into property, but also, you know, like you want to like take slaves and just like, you know, people like, you know, sexual violence. How do you prevent sexual violence and like slave taking and everything?
Mm-hmm.
And so for those that, you know, the thing that I see that works seems to be private property and like laws against violence and like the rule of law.
So some government.
Some government. Yeah, I can't escape them. I like ideas like that we could have private rights enforcement agencies that could do those things without being government, and sort of competition between those different rights enforcement agencies would produce a nice equilibrium, and we sort of wouldn't have anything that was actually looked like a government. But those are theoretical ideas.
Yeah, it sounds like a capitalist utopia to me.
Yeah, they're theoretical ideas that I don't know if they would work in practice.
Yeah.
You know, one possibility is you get these rights enforcement agencies, and then there's like a slight imbalance of power between the rights enforcement agencies.
Right.
And like one rights enforcement agency just starts like kind of strong arming everybody and like makes it like, you know, prevents other rights enforcement agencies from operating within its territory. And then all of a sudden you get something which is exactly like a government. You get a despot.
Not only that. Yeah. Right. Well, how do you prevent, yeah, whoever has the most money from just deciding all the rules? You know, if you have private enforcement, how do you stop somebody from just that just being essentially someone with a lot of money's army?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean,
and this is getting, I think that's the distinction between your definition of capitalism and the critique definition of capitalism,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that, like, okay, let's say you have everything is private property, everything's done privately. How do you prevent, essentially, I don't know if monopoly is the right word, but
right.
like, you know, from power just becoming centralized in the control of a few capitalists, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And maybe that's a distinction with fiat as well, because I think you can't separate what's happening right now
yeah.
from fiat.
Fiat, the fiat system definitely makes these wealth inequalities much, much worse.
Right.
I mean, the amount of resources that governments mobilize, when they pick a winner, that winner wins super hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that exacerbates inequality, essentially. And we have this state, which is like the most powerful entity, single entity.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a source of inequality.
Yeah.
Right?
Fair enough.
Like the state is the most resourced sort of entity, and thus it is able to do the most sort of unfair things.
Mm-hmm. Fuck the state.
Fuck the state. Yeah, we both really hate the state.
I didn't used to.
Yeah.
That was, yeah, we were talking about like how Casey has or hasn't influenced me. And
yeah.
I think you haven't convinced me that well of capitalism, but
right.
definitely on fuck the government.
Yeah. I think pretty much almost every time the government gets its fingers in things that they fuck things up. I think like all these like sacred cows of the state
mm-hmm.
are terrible. Like I think like public schooling is terrible. I think the FDA is terrible. Like I don't think there's a single government agency that I like. The only one is like maybe the Coast Guard, because that's the one branch of the military that actually like guards the borders. Like get rid of the rest of the branches, leave the Coast Guard. I don't know if there's any other government agency. I mean, yeah, I mean, like, there's some amount of, like, for example, one place that markets fail is when there are unpriced externalities.
Mm-hmm.
When you and me do a transaction which is mutually beneficial for us, but which leaves a third party worse off. And I do think that there are certain unavoidable places where that happens.
Yeah.
One of them is with environmental stuff.
Right.
So basically is... the two are like ocean pollution and air pollution. I think those are the two things that are that we possibly need some sort of like some sort of like government intervention in. But I think all most every other example of an externality is like completely bogus.
Yeah, I mean, I think the environmentalism argument is where capitalism feels morally wrong to me, is that like, and I mean, you've accused me of just wanting to control outcomes and not letting people just, which, you know, it partially is that. But I think, I don't know, my moral intuition is that pursuit of profit can be short-sighted,
mm-hmm.
and
sure.
things like environmental protection and preservation mm-hmm. are not things that their problems become immediately noticeable, or they maybe like build up over time, and there also aren't quick solutions like to get rid of the quick choices that you made to make profits at the expense of the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's hard to imagine how you can protect things like, as you said, ocean pollution, air pollution, without some sort of regulation that prevents people from just pillaging mm-hmm. for profit.
Right. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lots of things that I do think that, you know, so I think that we sort of see a lot of the time it's hard to imagine how things would work if we didn't have a government.
Mm-hmm.
Like one, you know, one, I guess it's sort of a straw man critique of libertarianism is like, who's going to build the roads?
Yeah.
And I think it's actually really simple. Like that if we didn't have government agencies building roads, we would figure out how to build roads, and it would be just incredibly trivial. Like groups of property owners were like, we need roads. They would, you know, form associations that would pay for the roads.
Mm-hmm.
Private individuals would build roads between places that needed roads and, you know, have tolls and stuff like that. Similarly, you know, for example, national parks, people care enormously about preserving natural areas,
mm-hmm.
both because they like the idea of preserving them and because they want to go visit them. So the idea that if we didn't have like state parks and we didn't have government preservation of natural areas, that this would somehow like just completely vanish under private organization.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the case, because I think that the reason that governments do these things is because people want them, governments to do them. And if we didn't have the government doing them, people would just privately organize to do them.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, that's fair. I think what that makes me think of is, I think, you know, one of the issues that people in, you know, middle class and upper middle class America have is like a lack of fulfillment that mm-hmm. I think they sometimes blame on capitalism.
Right.
Like they're working incredibly cushy tech jobs or whatever, right. you know, and they live in yeah. beautiful apartments and they have anything yeah. they could ever want, and they feel empty, and they yeah. think, okay, capitalism didn't really deliver on its promises yeah. of a better life.
Yeah.
And I think what you're describing actually sort of gets at that, where it's like, okay, let's say that all of a sudden the government is not deciding that this is going to happen, and you know, whatever, your base level participation is essentially just voting for one party or the other, and that's and paying your taxes.
Yep.
And that's the entire extent of your involvement in political organization or organization of society in
right.
general.
Right.
Let's say that disappeared, and all of a sudden you have to figure out like,
it's like, no,
how to make roads, how to protect what you care about. Then like all of a sudden yeah. your actions become a lot more yeah. meaningful, right?
You're really blackpilling me on voting right now. Like I hate voting, but this is another reason to hate voting, that people think that like the way that they can have an impact on society is once a year going into a little booth and like writing down their stupid opinions on a piece of paper and putting them into a box.
Mm-hmm. Like, I love doing that. And writing my stupid opinions down on a piece of paper.
and that if that didn't exist, maybe they would be like, oh, I actually have to do something.
Yeah.
I have to figure out how to do something instead of just kind of whining, like whining in the form of checking checkboxes.
Yeah.
That in a way, like voting like cucks us all into thinking that the only way we can do anything is by participating in the super broken process.
Well, it sort of makes it that way, right? Because if it's the government's job to do X, Y, or Z,
right.
then like, yeah, there's not going to be private organization to do that. There's not yeah. really going to be a way to get involved yeah. in that.
The only thing you do, like you're like, oh, the government is going to do this, so what am I going to do? I'm going to try to influence the government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, right. I think about this all the time, and I feel like democracy could be a whole other episode.
Democracy.
Like, that we can.
Democracy is like, if you want to see me really just get like hostile and mean, like yeah. that's I just hate democracy okay, so we don't have much. I hate it so much. All right, we're not gonna do it. We're not gonna... People think democracy is so great, and it's just fucking trash. Holy shit. And they're like, oh, are you a fascist? Is that what you want? Do you want? Yeah. No, I don't want fascism. Come on, Jesus.
Yeah, you've got some unpopular opinions.
Yeah, I'm reining it in.
Yeah, yeah. You got to keep it under control. But what I was going to say was, what was I going to say? Fuck, now I'm forgetting.
We're sort of talking about how people are sort of, you know, like corralled into thinking this one method of influencing the world is what they can do.
Right. What I was going to say is, yeah, I think about that all the time with, you know, if you want to do something or like get involved or like show that you care about something, the only thing that you can do is politically organize to try to win elections.
Yep.
That is the extent. Yep. I mean, not obviously, I'm sure there's cases where that's not, you know, the case, but the majority of any sort of doing something in society is politically organizing for elections, getting certain candidates on a ballot and depending on your representative for essentially allocating government funding to do it for you.
Yep.
And I don't know if it was always like that.
I have heard that there's been a rise in the last 100 to 200 years of government agencies to do things and a concurrent decrease in things like private charities.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about is I also, this is another sort of aside, but I think partially some of the alienation that people feel in modern life, wealthy people feel, not wealthy, but you know, whatever, like the sort of like managerial class.
Ennui, these like, I think these people are losers. Like, they're like, oh, I hate capitalism. And it's like, what are you doing? You're working for some fucking tech company in San Francisco. And like, dude, quit your job. Like, find something else to do.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
There's so much, like, abundance. Like, you could get a job that paid a quarter of what you're making and still eat. And, like, you could devote all your time to whatever you enjoy.
Yeah, like making podcasts. Like,
like making podcasts in the forest, like dressing up and going to the woods. Yeah. Yeah.
The ultimate anti-capitalist act.
Yeah.
No, but what I was going to say is I think partially some of their unfulfillment comes from not being connected to place. And I think historically it was much more common for millionaires and wealthy people to be extremely involved in the city that they live in. Like I think about like when I lived in Pittsburgh, so much of like the architecture and the just the entire city was built by extremely wealthy people like Carnegie Mellon, like those sort of like industrial era millionaires, billionaires, whatever, that lived in Pittsburgh. And they, you know, they didn't have such jet setting lifestyles where maybe they have like a home here and a home here and they're online. And like, I think now we're not as connected to place as we used to be just because it's easy to travel. It's easy to escape online, whatever it is. Yeah. And at that time when, you know, Pittsburgh was on the rise, that those people had a much greater relationship to the city that they lived in. And now I think the upper class is no longer bound to cities in the way that they used to be.
Yeah.
So there's not as much incentive for, you know, the wives to do their charity work or like to build this museum or to do whatever, that sort of private charity stuff. Like your argument about, you know, the government stepping in and sort of pushing out private like that, I'm sure that's part of it as well. Yeah. But I think, disconnection to place, people not really giving a shit or feeling like they can have any influence over the place that they live in.
Another aspect to that is that when rich people try to do nice things, a lot of the time we just totally shit on them super hard. Like, didn't like Mark Zuckerberg donated like tens or hundreds of millions of dollars to a hospital in San Francisco that's now like the, you know, Priscilla Chan or Mark Zuckerberg like hospital or whatever.
Yeah.
And people like fucking shit on him.
Yeah.
When he like, he donated tens of million dollars to a hospital.
Well, it's not, first of all, it's never enough, right?
It's never
like,
enough.
It's like, well, you could solve world hunger, so why don't you do that, buddy? That, it is often also the case that rich people are out of touch with what would help their society. Obviously, you know, donating to a hospital seems like a pretty neutral thing to do.
Yep.
But yeah, I think also people think billionaires shouldn't do this. It should be our government that does this.
Right.
And that's just, yeah, it's a different way of thinking that honestly, I thought that way too up until very recently.
I think that that is reasonable to think until you realize just how that the government is not incentivized to be competent.
Yeah.
And so when it spends money, it just doesn't succeed in accomplishing the goals that that money is, right. that it's attempting to accomplish.
Well, and also, I mean, in the case of billionaires donating money, like you look at someone like Bill Gates, who mm-hmm. is like donating all this money, but right. really what he's doing is just amassing control to like shape the world in the image that he wants it to be.
Right.
You know, so yeah. I think people are skeptical for reasons that are, I don't know, it's hard. It's like, it's hard to ask people to have faith in anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like this actually maybe goes back to Bitcoin, but you know, I think there's a lot of people who are anti-capitalist. Maybe there's a different word that they could be using that would better describe what they're yeah. anti, but capitalist for whatever reason is this, maybe it's a Cold War holdout, like
yeah.
that America was like, we're capitalists and mm-hmm. capitalism won. And people are like, well, if this is capitalism, then fuck this. Like maybe that's why that word is the one. But, you know, I think it's easy to be against things. It's hard to actually believe in something.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, it's I don't necessarily blame people for yeah. not having faith in something like private parties
yeah.
making society better. Like why would they think that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a confusing thing. It's like, oh yeah, well, like why would private parties make things better? And it's like, well, yeah, it's everybody's sort of competing to like provide things that are valuable. And so people wind up doing useful things even mm-hmm. though they're pursuing their own self-interests. And we don't actually have like a really good idea of what to do. So we can't really yeah. elect somebody that we just tell them what to do. I think the personal values versus societal organization is like a really important point, is that people, you get, okay, we create private property and we let people do what we want. And then we see a lot of like markets and trade and finance and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then people look at that and they go, well, is that what you're telling me that that's what I'm supposed to value in my
yeah.
life? And it's
yeah.
like, no, definitely not. There's a parody religion called the Church of the Subgenius.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen, it's actually really appropriate that I have a pipe, because the icon god or something of this parody religion is called Bob Dobbs, I think. And he's this sort of like Norman Rockwell looking like picture of sort of like a cheerful like 50s sort of like American man.
Mm-hmm.
I believe he smokes a pipe. And this parody religion has a concept that I actually think is legitimately incredibly useful. Like the central value of the Church of the Subgenius is slack.
Slack?
Slack. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Slack is...
Slack like the messaging app?
Definitely not Slack. No, definitely not the messaging app. No. Although it would be fun if those people were closet Church of the Subgenius, like Bob Dobbs worshipers. No, Slack is having excess time, resources, energy, and attention to do with what you will.
Mm-hmm.
It's not sloth. It's not like not doing anything. It's having the time to do what you want. It's not having a bunch of things constantly that you have to attend to.
Mm-hmm.
Like an example of a person, and so what I'm getting at is I actually think that Slack is what people should be focusing on when they focus on what they should be doing with their own lives.
Yeah.
They should be accumulating slack, which is the space to do what you want.
Yeah.
And they look at, so an example of somebody who's kind of like in our capitalist society, who's doing it wrong, is somebody who like, as their income increases, their spending is always increasing,
mm-hmm.
such that they can't quit their job. They can't work less. They can't pursue something that's interesting to them. That's a person who isn't accumulating slack.
Yeah.
They're accumulating more resources and more money, but none of it is free to let them self-actualize.
Yeah.
Slack is what lets you self-actualize, right? It lets you decide what is important for you and do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the key is sort of the thing that maybe makes me like capitalism is that I think that capitalism, what you should do in a capitalist society is figure out how you can use it to accumulate slack to do the things that you think are important to you.
Yeah.
And maybe those things are going to be the things that actually make money. That's a possibility. That's a great way to get slack, is to do something that you want to be doing anyways and make money at it. So what I'm getting, so I sort of said this a second ago, but yeah, people look at capitalism and they look at markets and stuff and they go like, well, that seems like a terrible value system.
Yeah.
But it's not a value system.
Well, it sort of is, right. It is a terrible value system for an individual to have.
It's a terrible value system for everybody. We shouldn't value it. We should see it as a means to figure out what we like and do what we want to do and get ourselves the space to do what we want to do and like and self-actualize.
Do you think, though, that a capitalist society creates people who are individually, spiritually capitalist? I'm not necessarily arguing it does. I'm just, you know, just thinking about it in terms of like if you have a society that's organized around profit and assume that everyone is not a free, independent thinker who's trying to come to their own conclusions, are you just going to create a society of people that their meaning is basically to make money? Because I think that is that. I do think that that is often what happens. But I think the solution is not change the political system. It's like have a cultural, like have religion or have something else, like that. It, there needs to be something else besides just the political system that defines people's lives.
Yeah.
Because I think you will. I think if you have a spiritual vacuum, people will fill it
with
the system that they're living in.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is true. Yeah. I mean, to some extent, capitalism does, like, I mean, you know, markets and prices and stuff does give people hints about what might be valuable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when you see something, you know, the price system, when something has a high price, it people means people really want it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's valuable to think about making more of it. You know, it does actually kind of put you in touch with the needs and desires of other people.
Right.
You know, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe people aren't really sophisticated enough to grasp that. They don't really understand. I don't think people really understand where prices come from or like how prices worked. And if they were more aware of that, like, oh, like things with high prices are things that other people value. Like it's then interesting and worthy to think about how to provide those things. Then maybe they would have a better opinion of capitalism.
Well, and I think, I mean, if you are a business owner or somebody who's like trying to solve a problem and you're the person who's like solving it and reaping the rewards from that, that is infinitely more fulfilling than being one of 1,000 employees or multiple thousands of employees.
Absolutely.
At Amazon or whatever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Have you heard about the what's it called? Overemployed?
Overemployed?
Yeah, like overemployment.
Mm-mm.
It's sort of people who, now that everything has gone remote, are taking multiple jobs, multiple full-time jobs at the same time. So there's a subreddit, like r/overemployed. I might be getting the name wrong. And then they have this like funny lingo. So they have like J1, J2, J3, J4. That's job one, job two, job three, job four. And they're like, yeah, I started with job one, which is a remote marketing position. And then I'm like ramping up slowly. I don't want to go too fast. So last summer I started J2, which is like, oh yeah, some like, you know, intermediate like managerial position and like strategies for that. I actually think that's really helpful.
I could do that. That would be.
Yeah. And basically because I think that if people can do that, it's because companies are not actually accurately assessing how valuable their employees are.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you can do 10 hours a week or like 5 hours a week of work at a company, you're actually putting in 5 hours a week and they're paying you $200,000 a year, that company deserves to bleed that money because
they're just
like total idiots. And so I think that like it's revealing a lot of like, it'll make things more efficient. And this is getting into what you said about like, oh, is it really satisfying to be, you know, in one of thousands of employees at Amazon? I think a lot of the time why those jobs are inefficient are unsatisfying is because they're very inefficient, that those companies have very inefficient internal processes. And as an employee, you're constantly just doing things that are like kind of worthless.
Yeah.
And I think like when those companies face constraints that force them to become more efficient, that is like great. Like if companies start to realize that like, oh yeah, actually we can just cut these jobs out. Like all the people who have bullshit jobs, if they just all got fired, then they would find something useful to do. They'd be forced to actually find something useful to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think you would have a major chaos in the in-between. But
I don't want them to get fired all at once. I just want them to get fired one by one. And then like, yeah, then you have people like, then you have to have people who are like, okay, well, I'm going to try to do something useful. Or like the companies that do employ people to do useful things will like, you have company one, which has 1,000 employees and 800 of them are doing bullshit jobs. Mm-hmm. You have company two that has 100 employees and none of them are doing bullshit jobs. And then when the 800 employees at company one all get fired, they'll land at companies who are actually doing useful things.
How do you feel about, okay, I'm asking you this not practically, like, do you mm-hmm. think this would work,
yeah.
but more like morally?
Yeah.
How do you feel about like an Andrew Yang UBI view of the future where it's like robots are going to do so many jobs. Uh-huh. We don't need to work 40 hours a week. Why don't we just support people uh-huh. in like raise the baseline of life so that yeah. people can kind of just like do jobs because it will make their lives better rather uh-huh. than doing them out of necessity?
You're asking me morally or practically?
Okay, I'm not saying like I don't want you to give me like an economics argument for why that won't work. I'm asking like, do you think that that would, if it worked, would that be like a way to organize society that would bring fulfillment to people?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I think people would be super empty. I think that that's like the definition of the...
You got to hustle to find meaning?
No, that like, what are you doing? You're just like getting a check and then consuming things. Like, I think that real meaning...
Well, the idea is that the baseline wouldn't be a comfortable life. The baseline would be like, you're not going to die,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then on top of that, you can do jobs to make your life better. Mm-hmm. So it would give people more freedom, you know, giving it the best like steel man argument,
uh-huh.
that it would give people the freedom to like start businesses and like follow their passions and whatever, that they wouldn't just be like, okay, well, if I quit my job, I'm going to starve, so I can't quit my job.
I don't know if right? I can really react to this without giving the like economic point of view.
All right. Well, maybe we shouldn't get into it then.
Yeah. Like, I think that like if you gave people a lot of money, they wouldn't have to find productive things to do. And so we would produce less stuff and then our qualities of life would go down.
So do you think that the threat of risk or having to take a risk in order to get something is... Because I think people won't take a risk, and so they won't do things that are fulfilling to them, generally. That's not everyone. Of course, there are people that will take risks to do something that's more fulfilling or more mm-hmm. worthy. But I think as long as people can be, captured by a job that's not fulfilling but allows them to pay the bills, and mm-hmm. the alternative is, you know, whatever, the abyss, the void, mm-hmm. that they will always choose the job and not take the risk. But if they didn't have, social, like if you had a social safety net, then yeah. they would maybe take that less of a risk to do whatever.
I think they'd just watch Fox News 8 hours a day.
Yeah. So that's what you think.
Yeah. I think that being forced to do something productive is both valuable for other people, like both produces resources mm-hmm. that make us all better off and personally fulfilling.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, like, in relation to your argument about Slack,
mm-hmm.
that like you should be pursuing Slack. So then what does that actually look like? Isn't that essentially what that system would be creating, is more Slack for people to have time to do whatever thing that they want? Or,
well, again, this is getting to like a practical economic side of things.
Yeah.
But that like if obviously like I want people to have like more freedom to do things, but like I think sort of also what is valuable should be informed by what other people think is valuable to some
sure.
extent, or
yeah,
like what
yeah,
is
yeah,
useful.
Yeah, yeah.
But then also that we wouldn't practically have more Slack because our quality of life would go down because we would be overall much less productive.
Yeah.
And so like that would give us less Slack. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't have a lot of Slack in like the USSR, you know?
Right.
They really had a dearth of Slack over there.
They had an absolute dearth of Slack.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
What else did we want to talk about?
Anything about Bitcoin that we want to get into? Like specifics of Bitcoin and capitalism?
I mean, we haven't really done the whole fiat capitalism shtick.
Right.
Like, I think...
I mean, that just seems so simple to me. It's like money printer.
It seems
like,
simple to you because you're a Bitcoiner, but it is incredible to me now that I'm like orange-pilled to just read anything that's like a critique of capitalism mm-hmm. or like a leftist whatever, like... any sort of critique over the last 50 years,
mm-hmm.
nothing fucking mentions fiat.
No,
nothing.
Absolutely not. No, it's insane.
I don't understand.
I watched a, oh, we've got a visitor. Definitely got to leave that in.
Yeah.
So that was a cute dog. I like dogs like that are just like kind of psychopathic.
Yeah,
just like
just
run
ready
over.
To hang, ready yeah. to be on the pod.
But yeah, like, I mean, this was like so aggravating. I watched this, video about inflation
mm-hmm.
and it was like some like, you know, CNBC thing. I don't know why I'd gotten onto it. Like I had just clicked some like, you know, link on Twitter or something and it took yeah. me to some like CNBC video. And it was like, what causes inflation? And they were like, well, when, you know, people start producing less, that causes inflation. And when people like have like more demand, that causes inflation. Mm-hmm. And when like maybe
or when Russia's bad and we need to put sanctions on them because they're being bad.
Putin's bad.
And that's what causes inflation, but yeah, not
it did not
the money printing.
Mention the money supply at all. This was like yeah. it was like there's two sides of a price. There's the amount of goods and there's the amount of money. And so sometimes when the price goes up, it's because the amount of goods went down. But if the amount of money doubles, the prices should double. Like, it's just like the most like basic elementary yeah. shit. And it's like it's like fucking journalistic malpractice that these yeah. people like.
But they're not taught that. You know what I like? I think people genuinely don't know. Like, I would say for you, Casey, uh-huh. if you're trying to change the hearts and minds of Americans in the next generation,
uh-huh, yeah.
the focus should not be on capitalism.
Yeah, capitalism is a losing argument. Yeah.
Because the thing is
nobody likes capitalism.
Well, and Bitcoin is your Trojan horse to get more capitalism.
It is.
So don't focus on getting people to think about capitalism.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Whatever. I think reasonable people will disagree. I think we're both reasonable.
Yeah.
And I think we disagree on certain things and we agree on other things. But I think fiat is something that people are incredibly undereducated on.
Right.
Totally
right,
ignorant.
Right. And when they learn about it, they hate it.
Yeah,
they don't
of
like
course.
It when they
no
learn about
one
it.
Likes
Nobody
it.
Likes it.
No one yep. likes it.
Yep.
And it's
yep.
obvious also once you see it how it's resulted in so many problems. And yep. like, you know, if people feel like money is fake, it's because it is fake.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't be,
yep.
and it wasn't,
yep.
but it yep. is now. That's yep. that's the soup that we're living in.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's right. And it's, you know, I think the reason why it's hard for me to convince people, why it's not going to be very successful to convince people about capitalism is great, is because it's a consequentialist argument. It's
yeah.
based on observing a lot of things and like noodling really hard on a lot of like topics and being like, yeah, okay, I guess like it looks like interventions there don't work very well. And it's like, yeah, okay, I guess like their like private property does produce pretty good outcomes. These aren't like succinct arguments that you can make to convince people.
Yeah.
But if you're like, look at the money printer, like it funds wars, it makes us poor, it like robs us of our ability to like be financially secure.
It's essentially a tax on the poorest people in a society.
Yeah, exactly.
Your proximity to assets in the money printer directly impacts your ability to acquire more wealth.
Yeah, and also it means, oh, you have to be an investor. If you want to preserve, if you want to get and preserve wealth, you have to have whatever you do as a job is like your day job, but you have to have a second specialty as an investor that you need to buy like index funds or whatever
yeah.
to just not have your shit be taken away from you.
See, that's a good thing. Okay. Cause everyone's forced into their 401ks, right?
Right. Yep.
And I know so many people that just complain about that. They're like, I don't want to do that. Like, yep. I know that I should, yep. and I know yep. that I have to because yep. that's my only option to save for retirement. But I hate corporations, especially the top fucking 500 corporations. Like,
yep.
fuck them.
Yep.
Tell them to buy Bitcoin.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
an opt out.
Yeah. And like the specialty thing is really like, I have a friend, he's a super smart programmer and like, he's a programmer. That's what he does. That's what he just does with his life. And he was telling me, yeah, it's so stupid that I also have to learn how the stock market works.
Yeah.
I just want to like do programming and not think about anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But I have to like get this weird esoteric specialty just to like keep my head above water.
Yeah. Thanks, fiat.
Yeah. Thanks, fiat. Yeah. Maybe we just need to have the anti-fiat episode.
Yes.
Just like shit on fiat
yeah,
for like an hour and a half.
Let's do it.
Yeah. That'll be a lot of good
we
clips
did that a
too.
Little bit with the inflation episode, but I think that was like our second episode.
Yeah.
So I think we can get even more yeah. into it.
I mean, like war has come from money printer.
Yeah.
You know, straight up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like and a lot of the time, like, of course, corporations will profiteer off of war.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question. And there's no question that to some extent, the military industrial complex itself instigates a lot of wars.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But a lot of that comes from the fiat money printer.
Yeah.
Like, why does the government have the money to pump into the military industrial complex so that it's strong in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
Fiat.
Yep.
Yep.
Well.
Yeah, shall we wrap it up?
Should we wrap it?
I think we really got to a point that we both really agree on mm-hmm. really strongly.
This was a beautiful episode. I was worried we were going to argue more than we did.
We didn't really argue at all.
No.
No.
No, we did a good job.
Yeah.
Great work.
Good for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Casey.
Yeah.
I had a great time.
Thank you, Aaron. I had a great time
yeah.
as well.
All right. See you next time.
See you next time.